Let us come to other important aspect of a valid contract, and that is legality of object. The way the consideration has to be lawful, even the object has to be lawful. What is an object? The object means purpose or design. And any unlawful object makes the contract void under the Indian Contract Act. Okay? The object should be lawful to make it legal. Section 23 of the Contract Act defines what is unlawful. Anything outside 23 is perfectly fine. So what are examples of unlawful objects? When it is forbidden by law, you cannot enter into a contract of marriage with a minor. There is no when we talk about a special marriage act or nikah is a form of contract. Okay, it's just like contract. In that, if you expect to enter into or if you are entering into a brokerage kind of for marriage proposals, that's not allowed. It's forbidden by law. If it is prohibited by a special legislation, for example, buying of a property from a forest land, the object becomes unlawful because it is forbidden by the legislation. The law does not permit. If it defeats the purpose or provision of law, just because the law is not allowing, I will enter into a contract for someone to do it for me. No, it will be unlawful. If it is obtained fraudulently, if it involves into injury to a person or property, vandalizing, I employ people for vandalizing and I give money. It may be a contract in either in terms of proposal and offer and acceptance, but there is a consideration in terms of money, but the object for which this contract is entered into is illegal because I'm vandalizing somebody's property, which is opposed to public policy, trade with alien enemies, interference with the course of justice, for suppressing the prosecution, for sale of public offices, title or honors, and marriage brokerage. All these are objects which are unlawful as per Section 23 of the Indian Contract Act. Now, this is the overview of various modes of discharge of a contract. How is a contract discharged? There are four main modes. One is by agreement, the way the agreement is handled. One is by performance. The third is by breach. And the fourth is by operation of law. How does it get discharged? By agreement. Okay. Either you have altered the agreement, you have rescinded from the agreement, there is a merger, there is waiver, any changes, any innovation, any new, the main crux of the agreement, you have changed it completely by adding other agreement, then it becomes novation. That is by agreement. By performance, it can be either by impossibility, that is initial impossibility and the subsequent impossibility. Then there is lapse of time by a particular time. As I told you, it has to be either done within a reasonable time or it has to be done within the time specified. So if that particular time lapses, then the agreement is discharged, the contract is discharged by operation of law. Unauthorized material alteration, insolvency, there is a merger or death. What are the remedies for the breach of contract? You can file suit for defamation, damages. You can file for cancellation or rescission. You can file for specifically performing, saying that specifically perform it. You can file a suit for quantum merit. You can file a suit for injunction, that is stopping someone from entering or doing into or entering into a contract with third party. And you can file a suit for demanding for restitution. Now, when the contractual relationship subsisting between the parties come to an end, When the rights and obligations created by it are extinguished, the contract is said to be discharged or terminated. Now, a normal contract can be discharged how? I have completed my part of contract, you have completed your part of contract, contract has come to an end. The other part is when it is terminated, or you have not performed your part of contract, or you have gone ahead and changed the main thrust of the contract, or you have resigned it, saying that, look here, now I will not go ahead, I want to resign from my part of contract. So let us take each head one by one. Discharge by agreement. Now, if the parties to a contract agree to substitute a new contract for it, or resign or alter it, the original contract need not be performed. For example, there is term A, term B and term C, of which I say, look here, the term C, we will change it. So I need not go ahead and work on the first term C, but the new term C that has been added, and any conditions imposed would change accordingly. Novation, it means substitution of new contract for the existing one. Completely new contract has, when I say I will go ahead and enter a new contract, let us remove that. You make a reference to the old contract saying that we are cancelling that and this is the new contract that has come. So it's novation, something new which has come in place of the old one. Rescission, it means cancellation. Alteration means making changes to the contract. Okay. And the changes, please remember, it's not some minuscule changes, it is the material term. If a material term is changed, then the old contract will be discharged and you will be required to work as per the new material changes. Okay. Remission, which means acceptance of a lesser sum than what was contracted, or lesser fulfillment of a promise. 100 rupees and instead of that 80 rupees given. I have agreed. So remission. Waiver refers to abandonment of a right which a person is entitled to. I am waiving off my right for damages. I am accepting the good that you have given. I am waiving off my right to sue you for damages. That is waiver. I am giving up the right. Merger is combining of two things. I am merging two different things into one. So two different contracts make the third contract. It takes place when inferior right accruing to the contract merges into a superior right. Now, what is discharge by performance? I have performed my part of contract and I stand discharged. Okay. The parties to a contract must either perform or offer to perform their respective promises unless such performance is dispensed with or excused under the provisions of law or act. Okay. For example, if the promisor die before performing his part of contract. Okay. If it can be, for example, loan. Okay. I promise to pay off my loan. I passed away. If I have a property in my name, it doesn't bind my legal representative. But if your contract stipulates, which more or less your loan agreements have, that will always include your assignees, your successors, etc., etc., then it will be binding on them. Okay, so unless contrary appears from the contract, it is the obligation of the legal representative to perform the promise. Discharge by breach. I was supposed to do my part of contract, you were supposed to do your part of contract. But before I could do, you had to do, and you have not performed and you have breached that contract. It discharges me from my obligation of contract if you have breached. So when a party to the contract fails to perform his obligations, he is said to have committed breach of contract. Okay. Then discharge by operation of law. Unauthorized material alterations, insolvency, merger, death, these are various circumstances which relate to termination of contract by operation of law. The law operates in a manner which frustrates the contract. discharge by impossibility. What is impossibility? When I was entering into contract, when I executed the contract, it was possible to execute it, but subsequently it so happened that I cannot go ahead. It's impossible for executing and performing the contract. There are two kinds of it: subsequent impossibility and initial impossibility. Initial impossibility exists at the time of formation of contract. Okay, such agreement to do an impossible act becomes void. For example, when A agrees to discover treasure by magic, it's not possible. So this agreement will be void. It is void from the beginning. It is impossible from the initial stage. Subsequent impossibility, the way example I gave for the term impossibility, at the time of agreeing, entering into contract, the circumstances were so that I can go ahead and execute. But post execution, the circumstances have so happened that I cannot go ahead and execute the contract. It may be my death, the subject matter has disrupted, there has been change in circumstances, the law has changed, there has been declaration of war, there are some preconditions which have arisen, and there is impossibility of performance, or which we call as doctrine of frustration. So it is, please remember also, very important that these subsequent impossibilities are attributable to the fact that it is beyond the control of the parties. Parties force majeure is what we say. It is beyond the control of the party. Discharge by lapse of time. As I said, I have agreed to give good at a particular stipulated time. I do not go ahead and give the goods in that stipulated time. The lapse of time and the contract has frustrated its discharge. Okay. A agrees to supply certain goods to B at a certain price. Goods are to be delivered after a week and payment is to be made on delivery. Now A supplies the good as per agreement, but B does not make the payment. In 3 years, see, limitation, there is something called limitation for filing suit under the Limitation Act. It says 3 years. For recovery of money, it is 3 years. Specific performance, 3 years. Within 3 years, they have to file for recovery of money, for recovery of debt which has become due. If within these 3 years it is not paid, the suit is not filed, then it becomes a time barred debt. You cannot sue for such recovery which is time barred. You have to file your case within the 3 years time, within the limitation. So you have to be aware about what is the limitation also. Now we have spoken a lot about discharge, breach. What are the remedies that are available for breach? There are various remedies available, and these remedies more so are filing of a suit in civil court. Okay. Now it is duty of any lawful contracting parties to perform their respective promises. When these contracts formed is valid, it is a commitment on both the parties to perform this contract. Section 73 to 75 talks about what are the various remedies that are available when a party is guilty of breach. The aggrieved party can go ahead and file a suit for damages. What is damages? Taking compensation for whatever damage that I have suffered. Suit for cancellation or rescission, suit for specific performance, for quantum merit, injunction, and demanding restitution, that is to bring to the same position as it was before. Now these are basic aspects of contract where the contract is expressed, implied, etc. Now there is something which is also called a quasi-contract. The contract that we were discussing as of now were all the contracts where I have agreed, the other side has agreed. It's between the two persons who have understood it. And what are the main ingredients? In quasi, it's a fictional contract created by court, and the basis is equitable measures. Equity. It is not on the basis of a contract that you have entered. Like when I was talking about the breach, these files, suits that we file, it is on basis of the contract. Your rights arise out of the contract that you have entered. Okay. In quasi contract, it is the right doesn't arise out of the contract because there was never a contract in the first part. It is assumed that it is a contract kind of, and your remedy arises out of equitable reliefs on the principles of equity. Okay, it's not a contractual obligation. So what is a quasi contract? It is not an actual contract but is a legal substitute to impose equity between the two parties who have acted under a contract. Okay, the concept of quasi contract is a contract that should have been formed even though in law it is not defined anywhere. It is on the principles of equity. It's the court who have evolved these principles. It is used when a court finds it appropriate to create an obligation upon a non-contracting party to avoid injustice and to ensure fairness. For example, A is knocked down by a vehicle. B, a stranger who found A on the road in unconscious state, takes A to the doctor, and the doctor provides treatment to A. Now, in such situation, there was no contract between A and the doctor. A claims that he is not liable to pay for the services offered by doctor as he was in unconscious state at that time, and there is no agreement between the two. If this defense is accepted, then it would lead to unjust enrichment. The doctor has no doubt done his duty, but A is liable is supposed to pay to the doctor because the doctor has saved his life. In such a situation, the theory of quasi contract applies. Okay, in this case, it is the doctor who has spent his valuable time, treatment, etc. So hence, even if there was no agreement between A and the doctor, A will be liable to pay to the doctor. He would be required to make good to whatever time the doctor has spent. If A does not do it, then the doctor can go ahead and sue A. And on the basis of quasi contract, the court will go ahead and ask A to pay to the doctor. Now the principle here is unjust enrichment. A cannot enrich himself at the expense of the doctor. Okay, the main question that arises in such situation is the liability of the defendant. Let us take another example. A mechanic is called to repair the car belonging to X. The mechanic thinks that Y's car is the car belonging to X and repairs it. Y sees the mechanic repairing his car but does not stop him because he can get his car repaired free of cost. So here Y is benefiting. The important aspect is benefit. When mechanic asks for payment from Y, he refuses to pay the bill, saying, "I never asked you to do the." However, by implication, because Y knew, Y saw the mechanic doing it but did not stop for his own benefit. So, by implication, quasi contract has been created from the moment Y spotted the mechanic repairing his car. If Y would have stopped him saying, "Oh, wait here, look, you are under mistake, I never called you, don't repair my car. I have to get it repaired, but you shouldn't repair my car because I haven't entered into contract with you." No obligation created. But he allowed, why allowed the mechanic to repair his car, which means he assented to take the service. Why would be held liable for payment if it can be proved in the court that he was aware of the mistake of mechanic and he allowed him to continue the same mistake? Now, what is the rationale behind quasi contract? The very basis is the principle of unjust enrichment. Unjustly, no one should benefit on somebody's cost. Okay. If the plaintiff on an erroneous interpretation of the fact pays to the defendants a sum of money which he does not really owe, law, no less than justice, will require the defendant to restore it, that is, make good of the benefit taken. This shows that there are many situations in which law as well as justice require that certain persons be required to confirm an obligation although he has not broken any contract or committed to any tort. If a person in whose home certain goods have been left by someone by mistake, he is bound to restore them if he uses it. Okay? These are the examples of rational of quasi contracts, and these are quasi contract obligations. Now let us come to implied contract. What are implied contract? As I said, it implies that there is a contract. We have not verbally agreed. It is the action of the party which speaks for itself. So an implied contract is an agreement created by actions of parties involved, but it is not written or spoken. For example, I am entering the bus. It is implied that me entering the bus, flying the bus, will have to pay for whatever charges are required from one stop to the other stop. Okay, this is a contract assumed to be drawn. In this case, there is no written record or actual verbal agreement. A form of implied contract has an implied warranty provided automatically by law. Now, what is the theory behind the implied in fact contract? An implied in fact contract is form of an implied contract formed by non-verbal conduct rather than by explicit words. The United States Supreme Court has defined it as an agreement implied in fact as founded upon a meeting of mind, which although not embodied in an express contract, is inferred as a fact from the conduct of parties showing in the light of surrounding circumstances their tacit understanding. So when I gave you the example of bus, there is an understanding between me and the conductor, the one who is flying the bus, that the one who enters will pay only till the stop that he has to go. He cannot demand, like for example, I get in the bus at say Dadar and I want to get off at Masjid Bandar. The bus person can't say that, oh look here, I am going till Churchgate, so you have to pay me till Churchgate. No, the implied contract here is that you are coming till Masjid, you will pay to me till Masjid. That is how the tacit of mind, that is consensus ad idem, meeting of minds, meeting of the common understanding. Okay. The gist of this kind of action is that defendant upon the circumstances in the case is obliged by ties of natural justice and principles of equity. Okay. This, please remember, principles of natural justice and equity, fair play a very, very important role in, especially when there are unspoken laws and when there are unspoken circumstances where law has not been able to define everything. Just like our quasi contract. Lord Parker expressly pointed out that if a promise to pay back an ultra-vire loan could be imputed to the company as quasi-contractual obligation, the result would be to validate a transaction which has been declared to be void on the ground of public policy, and the law would be enforcing a notional contract where an express contract would have been void. Okay? Now, restoration of theory of unjust enrichment. First, we need to know what is the theory of unjust enrichment. Unjustly, somebody is benefiting without paying it back. Okay. The identification of quasi contract with implied contracts restricted the scope of relief, which would have been possible without any such hindrance. Okay. This unjust enrichment principle is under the principle, has evolved through principles of natural justice and equity. A sum of money was paid in advance under a contract for the supply of a machine, and performance was obstructed by outbreak of war. Their lordships allowed the advance to be recovered back as having paid for a consideration which had totally failed. So, what the principle here is that I will not allow you to benefit at my cost. I have paid you something, but because of the circumstances, we are not able to go ahead with the contract. But because you have already received the payment and you have, I have not received back your the consideration that should move from you, you are required to pay me the money. You can't, because it is my loss, neither am I getting the goods nor am I getting my money. So who is benefiting? The defendant, not me. So what equity says? It should be balanced. Nobody should be at loss. The defendant has been enriched. Now, when you are talking about unjust enrichment, there are factors which you will have to show to the court. You will have to show to the court that the defendant has benefited and enriched himself at your cost. This enrichment is at the cost of plaintiff, at his expense, and it would be unjust to retain the benefit. If we are able to show these factors, the restoration is permitted. Now, what is the position of quasi contract in Indian law? It starts from section 68 to 72, where we discuss the quasi contract. The part 1 is supply of necessaries under section 68. If a person incapable of entering into a contract or anyone whom he is legally bound to support is supplied by another person with necessaries suited to his condition, the person who has furnished such supplies is entitled to reimburse from the property of such incapable person. For example, we have something called the Mental Health Act. I am taking care of someone as a guardian. For example, let us say under Guardianship Act, the parents have passed away, I am taking care of a minor. And a certain property has been left behind by the parents for minor. I am taking care of the expenses. I can take back that money from his property. I can get it reimbursed from such incapable person's property. Part 2. Payment by interested person, which is by section 69. B holds a land in Bengal on lease granted by A, the zamindar. Revenue payable by A to the government being in arrears, his land is advertised by for sale by government. In this case, what he does? B goes ahead and pays off the arrears so that his lease does not get cancelled. In that event, A, the zamindar, will have to go ahead and pay that money. So under the revenue law, the consequences of sale will be annulled of B's lease. So B, to prevent the sale and annulment of his own lease, pays the government the sum due. A is bound to make good to B the amount so paid by A to the government. A cannot say that, oh, you have paid the arrears, I never asked you to do so, but you are benefiting, your land is saved. So A will be bound to pay to B. Part 3, section 17. Obligation of a person enjoying a non-gratuitous act. Non-gratuitous act is which is out of gratitude. Okay? If a person lawfully does anything for another person or delivers anything to him, not intending to do so gratuitously, out of gratitude or love, affection, and such other person enjoys the benefit thereof, the latter is bound to make compensation. It's because I have enjoyed it. And he never had any intention to do it free of cost. Hence, I will have to either restore the thing that was done or delivered or pay him back. Responsibility of finder of good. Very important. A person who finds good belonging to some other person and takes them into his custody is subject to same responsibility as a bailee. What he does is, his duties are same, his rights and liabilities are same as that of a bailee. Bailee is who? Who is a person, some article is left with them under a contract, who is supposed to return that article in safe custody. So if I am the finder of a good, okay, and in preservation of that good, let's assume I have paid rupees 100 just preserving that good, And when I'm returning it to the original owner and I tell him that, look here, for its preservation, I had to spend 100 rupees. It will be the liability of the actual owner to pay me, the finder of the good, 100 rupees because I have spent it on preserving that good. Mistake or coercion, section 72. Now, 72 deals with payments or acts done under mistake or coercion. A person to whom money has been paid or anything delivered by mistake or under coercion must repay or return it. This is again on the basis of principle of unjust enrichment. Nobody should get benefited unjustly at the cost of someone else. That's about with the law of contract. Thank you.